Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to another All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. It's the 31st of July, and as I speak, Britain has won a grand total of no medals.
That's not true.
Sorry, no gold medals. Who cares about silver and bronze? Second to third place? No, it's first or nothing, Rafe.
Well, I'm sorry. The men's gymnastics was very exciting, not to mention the GGs going over the jumps and dancing around the arena as well. That was the three-day eventing for those that don't know.
Yeah, and we got second place in the women's road race cycling over the 250 kilometres.
I mean, and that bronze in the swimming. But yeah, I wouldn't mind a few gold medals. But I guess the British team is feeling a bit like a Windows Phone at the moment, unloved by much of the world.
And ignored by America, the most important bit cut out, yes?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Shall we stay away from politics and move on to smartphones? It's just going to be a double header for this week's Insight podcast with the summer and all the travelings and goings of the team. It's just Rafe and I sitting down to talk about the last 7 days in the world of Windows Phone. And even though it's the quiet summer months, Rafe, it's actually, I'm looking down the list of stuff we've got here. There's big things, there's immediate things, there's things planning for the future. It's actually a pretty good spread of 7 days worth of stuff, isn't it?
No. I mean, we'll continue to see lots of app updates coming out, and there's lots of stuff about Windows Phone 8, some of which we won't actually be talking about on this podcast. But I've been sort of pleasantly surprised to see things have kept going even into what are traditionally relatively quiet months. I suppose part of that is about the fact that Microsoft is doing a big push at the moment. And if you're reading around the topics, particularly, you know, Windows 8 and then Office 2013, there is quite a lot going on. I guess we've traditionally come from the Nokia and the Symbian world, where most of Finland goes on holiday for July and August, or that's what it feels like. And so it does go quite quiet. Of course, nowadays, it's a bit more of an international feel. And it's not just because they fired everyone who works in Finland.
Yeah, they're still on their summer holidays, actually. But very briefly, Lorif, obviously there have been other stories and videos and leaks over the last week. We've not covered them on All About Windows Phone. We're kind of like leaving the powder dry to here officially, aren't we?
That's right, Ewan. I don't think it's any secret for people listening to this podcast, or at least the majority of them, that there's been a leak of the Windows Phone 8 SDK in the last week. As per our kind of standard policy, we don't comment on rumours and leaks. You know, part of that's about, you know, wanting to provide as accurate as possible information, but we also curate this stuff. So it's not that we're not going to comment on Windows Phone 8 in the future. We certainly will do, but we want to do that when we have all the information available to, you know, give you a completest picture as possible. You know, sometimes we think we should have done something a little bit different. I think in this case, it was a little bit bigger than we were expecting it to go, so maybe we should have done. But I don't think that's a major issue. But you can rest assured we will be covering Windows Phone in as much detail as you could wish for in due course.
And of course, we are aware that other Windows Phone sites are available, I believe is how the phrasing goes, Rafe. Yes.
Absolutely. We all read other Windows Phone sites, and we're sure that most of our audience do too. But we do, you know, kind of want to maintain a certain quality and a certain style on All About Windows Phone. And, you know, that is about, you know, being as accurate, as comprehensive as possible, and being very high quality. And obviously that's sometimes hard to, you know, coincide with leaks, which by their very nature can be a little uncertain. You know, we have occasionally covered a rumor or a leak, but generally we've double sourced it from an official source in this case. And obviously, you know, an SDK, I guess, could be deemed an official source, but, you know, you're never going to get a complete bit of information or a complete picture there. And you've probably seen that in some of the coverage you've read that's come out of Spotty. None of it's, you know, been surprising features. It's all stuff we've anticipated. Indeed, most of it we've talked about as something we expect to arrive in Windows Phone 8. And I mean, in terms of the official release, we expect that to happen, I guess, sometime in the next couple of weeks. And at that point, you know, that'd be a time where we'll start talking about it in a lot more detail.
So there you go. We have a line, and being very British, we're kind of reserved and holding back and possibly looking for silver plates again, Rafe. But anyway, staying on things that have silver on them, with a little tiny silver bit edge around this side, the Samsung Omnia M. Now, this is one of these strange devices that's announced and is going to be carrying Windows Phone 7.5 before Windows Phone 8 comes out, which isn't going up to Windows Phone 8. It's now going to be available in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's got announced by Samsung back in May, and I guess you could describe it as kind of the mid-tier Windows Phone device sitting somewhere between, you know, the majority of devices, and then something like the Lumia 610 is maybe below it. I mean, I think in terms of specifications, at least, it's a 1 gigahertz processor and 348 megabytes of RAM. It does seem a slightly strange amount. We haven't been able to confirm it.
And four gig of storage as well.
Yeah,
so quite
that's right. And it's
got,
you know, a 4-inch Super AMOLED screen. So, you know, it's definitely a step up from something like the 610, but maybe, you know, not quite up with Lumia 800 or some of Samsung's other Windows Phone devices. And yes, in one sense, the timing is a bit strange on this, but I guess it's about having a presence in the market and getting to a certain price point. And while a lot of people, you know, will want to get a Windows Phone 8 device, other people will be looking for something that, you know, provides better value. I think, honestly, Samsung are going to struggle a bit with this in the UK because the pricing is £20.50 per month free on a contract, or £290-odd SIM-free. If you compare that to some of the pricing that's around for Nokia's devices, I mean, the Lumia 610, for example, you can get that SIM-free for sort of £170 or even a bit less than that, and the 710, it's the sort of £200 mark, and both of those are available on contract starting at around £15 a month. So be interesting to see how it does in sales. Phones for You have got a 2-month exclusive on it, and they're clearly intending to give it a bit of a push, and they've got their Samsung centres within their stores where they'll be doing that. Little bit sceptical, we'll have to wait and see, but it is available in some other European countries. It's also available, I understand, in India, or just about to go on sale. So I suspect it's, you know, Samsung have created this device at the request of operators who wanted to have a Windows Phone device to tie them over. Because although we keep talking about Windows Phone 8, it's probably, you know, worth emphasizing we're not really expecting the devices to happen before, you know, November. So, you know, we're still talking 3 or 4 months away. And that's, you know, the first availability. It will take a while to roll out globally. So in one sense, 2013 is the big moment for Windows Phone 8.
And there's also, of course, even Nokia, I think, have said that they're still going to be selling Windows Phone 7.5, be it 7.8 devices, as they go through. And these, because of the, you know, single core processors, less RAM needed, they are going to come down in price quite significantly. And, okay, you're not going to get the top line games that are going to come through there, but the stuff that's programmed in .NET, in the sort of not, that's not using direct native code, should still run on both platforms. So there's still a huge amount of market out there. And You know, the doomsayers would say nobody at all will buy this phone. And I think they're wrong. I think some people will buy this phone because it can't be updated. Everybody will avoid it. That's why I'd be very interested to see what the sales number are, you know, right up until Christmas.
That's right. I mean, it's easy to get into a mistake of saying I wouldn't buy it, therefore no one else would buy it. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with the app situation, because honestly, we don't know yet. You know, will developers continue to release, you know, 7.5 or rather 7.8 versions in addition to 8, assuming it's not very much work to do so, which in a lot of cases may well be the case. You know, it's not going to be a sudden shift over to C++ coding in all cases, I would suspect. You know, a lot will continue to use the kind of managed frame code works. Sorry, the managed code frameworks, I should say. Then the kind of the other element is, yes, you're quite right. They are going to continue to sell Windows Phone 7 devices. You know, the assumption that things suddenly switch over from one version to another just doesn't happen. I mean, we see that in the iOS world. We see that in the Android world. You know, a lot of the device sales are actually on the old ones, generally because they cost less money, and generally lower cost devices sell in greater numbers. And I expect to see that thing happen in Windows Phone. It hasn't been an issue so far, obviously, because all the devices have been upgradable to future versions. But, you know, something like the Lumia 610, which is, you know, as I said, selling in the UK around the £160 mark, I expect that to drop towards £100 and stay that way, you know, and may well be available for another 12 months. I mean, neither Microsoft or Nokia have actually commented on how they're going to be addressing the lower volume, the lower cost devices in terms of the technical approach. I mean, Nokia have actually said they'd be using both Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8, but we haven't heard much about, you know, the details or of how that will work. You know, will Windows Phone 8 run on a single core? I suspect it probably will, and that may be well how the cheaper devices are done. All we know that it is going to happen, and the costs are going to come down from where they are now, and it's going to use you know, both the old version and the new version, if you like, of the platform. So that's going to be a very interesting one to watch. I mean, it does suggest to me that this Omnia M may be left a little bit high and dry by developments over the next few months. But as you say, you know, there are always going to be people interest in buying these devices, and especially if it's getting pushed in the retail channels, in the high street phones for you, you walk in, they'll say, you know, I want a Samsung device and I want it with easy to use platform, and you may well get directed, you know, in the way of this Omnia M.
I want a Samsung device, but this Android stuff is far too complicated. I just want it to make calls and talk to Facebook.
Yeah. You know, there are people who are going to walk in the shop and ask for that. I suspect this will you know, be one that sells more to the normal people rather than the phone geeks, if I can put it that way.
The normal people, those people over there.
Exactly. But, you know, I've got a group of friends and parents and relatives who, you know, I've introduced to Windows Phone at one point or another, and you know, they all like using it, and a lot of them were previously on Android or on Symbian devices, you know, and they wanted something that was reasonable value. So, you know, iOS was kind of ruled out, if you like, because I think that's the other recommendation you can make to people who want something simple. And that's where Windows Phone, you know, comes into its own. And I think particularly in this mid-tier or the lower end of the market, it can become quite attractive for people who don't want to deal with the hassle of, you know, having to think about how to use a smartphone. That's going to be an interesting topic to watch in future months, yeah. Actually, I think.
And it's also carrying on that discussion we have with the power that the networks, in this case, the retail, because the UK is a very interesting marketplace, whereas you have the network resellers, your Vodafone's, your own shops, then you have the independents like Carphone Warehouse and PhoneSphere as well. They have a huge impact on the decisions that are made by the public. It's why you spend a lot of time courting them. It's why in America you have so much courting of AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint. You know, it's like you've got one of three, four. You've got T-Mobile in there as well. And if they don't pick it up, it doesn't go anywhere. If they do pick it up, but they stick it in the back corner of a store, then tough. That's the sort of stuff you play. So PhoneSphere, you've done this with Samsung a fair amount of times, and Samsung themselves, of course, are now blasting phones at every single point in the market, because we've got another leak that suggests that they have decided on name for their Windows Phone 8 devices coming out. They have already said that they're doing that, and they've got the devices running over all the Android platforms with the Galaxy brand. You know, Samsung have got something at every single price point now, which is something Nokia were very good at 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, Samsung are absolutely dominating in smartphones. We'll talk about that, I guess, in a little while. But that...
Oh, no, let's talk about the IDC numbers now.
We'll talk about IDC numbers now. Absolutely. Let's go for it.
Because they are impressive. The market is still going up, the way, even though we seem to be in the grips of a depth of recession. In terms of unit sales, it's something like second quarter was up 50 million or so on the same period last year, something up to like 150 million smartphones over 3 months. And Samsung did about 50 million of them, didn't they?
That's right. I mean, the total number is that IDC have given, at least, and these are, of course, estimates, is 153 million, which is up from 108 million. You know, same time last year. But I think the big change is, you know, how much Samsung is of that. As you say, they're just over 50 million for the last quarter compared to 18.4 million, you know, the year before. That's a change in market share from 17% to 32%, almost doubling. That's largely come, it has to be said, at the expense of Nokia, who've kind of gone from 15.4% of the market down to 6.6% of the market. But actually, it's also HTC have been suffering, and indeed Apple to a certain extent. You know, Apple have dropped from 19% down to about 17%.
Yeah, but look at that line next. Look at that fifth place manufacturer.
Yeah, absolutely.
ZTE. 8 million shipments, year-on-year change, 300%.
Yeah, well, of course, it's easy to do 300% when you haven't sold very many phones before.
But to go to number five in the world when you haven't sold any phones before.
Yeah, but it is a very impressive performance. And actually, another Chinese company, Huawei, who incidentally are one of the launch partners for Windows Phone 8, is literally just behind ZTE. I estimate they're on about 7.5 million devices. They're probably tying with RIM for sixth place. In fact, it's kind of notable that these figures, for the first time, RIM has dropped out of the top five smartphone manufacturers. Nokia is just sticking in at number three, ahead of HTC and ZTE. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, Nokia have another bad quarter coming up, but I think they'll bounce back a bit in quarter four. But I suspect they'll struggle to, you know, make meaningful inroads in this year. It'll really be 2013. But it does show just how strong Samsung is. And you know, if you look at mobile phones as a whole, of course, a lot of that is based on smartphones now. It's really between Samsung and Nokia. Nokia is still strong in mobile phones, but smartphones, you know, the strategy of Samsung of basically producing, you know, multiple platforms But if we're honest, it's not really about Windows Phone for Samsung. It's about Android and their own Barda platform. You know, those have both done, you know, incredibly well. It will be interesting to see if, you know, they do have some high profile Windows Phone 8 devices, whether they're able to shift a lot of those, or whether kind of Nokia's advantage, if you like, as the preferred partner, and let's face it, with the better onboard software bundles, you know, plays out. And it's going to be interesting because we're going to see Samsung, HTC, Nokia, and indeed Huawei, you know, facing off directly against each other. And it will be really interesting to see who comes out on top there, because a lot of the software will be similar. We think that Nokia is going to continue to probably win that fight, mainly because it's, you know, focused on that alone. But a lot of it will come down to, you know, how good is the hardware? How good is the design? Now, the hardware is kind of interesting because there will be quite a lot of similarity. That's the nature of Windows Phone, you know, a standard chassis spec. But we do know there are going to be more variations than that in Windows Phone. We've seen that in the screen resolutions already, and I suspect there's a lot more to come there. So I suspect a lot of it will come down to sort of design choice and then the hardware features that manufacturers choose to include. Samsung, you know, have a pretty good reputation there, partly because they control, you know, a lot of component supply themselves, and partly because they've had a lot of experience in building really high-end devices. And I think that's part of the reason they've done so well in the Android world. You know, it's had a halo effect, but they've also been able to shift a lot of the low-cost devices. You know, Nokia is now approaching this point where it can't really hide behind the excuse of, you know, it had to rapidly get a Windows Phone device to market. And as a result, it came up with something that was frankly fairly off the shelf and just sitting in a Nokia shell. They're going to have to bring in some of their, you know, unique hardware features, which they've done on their Symbian devices in the past. And I'm thinking here, you know, PentaBand 3G or maybe FM transmitters or, you know, improved radios. And that might be a differentiating factor. So I do wonder, having, you know, had it mainly about software, whether we might see a bit more of a resurgence on hardware-led differentiation. I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Okay, Punter's Hat or Nokia in third place at the moment. End of the year, Q4.
Yeah.
We're still going to be in third place on an IDC chart, right?
I think it probably will remain in third place, but I expect it to be pretty close. It'll be the next quarter where I wouldn't be entirely surprised to see them drop down, you know, a couple of places. But by Q4, they will have started selling Windows Phone devices. It's going to be tight, though, because, as I say, said earlier in the podcast, there's kind of this two-month window from the beginning of November, which you'll have to sell devices. And you never sell all your devices you can in those 2 months, because you're kind of ramping up production and ramping up all the distribution channels. You know, looking at past patterns of these things, it tends to take a little while before you know, you've got your devices flowing out your factories as fast as possible. So I might suggest it could be as little as, you know, a couple of weeks there at full flow. And more than that, it's actually the sort of geographic spread. So you'll launch in a number of launch markets, and I think they will take a while before they're shipping in loads of different markets. That'll be well into 2013, as indeed happened with the first round of the Windows Phone devices. You know, that's partly because that's just the nature of phone launches. It's partly also because Nokia said in their earnings call, which we talked about last week, that they were going to focus on a number of key markets. They're obviously going to concentrate on the ones where they think they can make most sales, but that will have an impact, because I guess the long tail will be less present in the last couple of months of 2012 than might otherwise be the case.
Interesting times. We'll keep an eye on all those numbers back at All About Windows Phone as we go through the year at 2012 and into 2013 as well. Let's go away from the big long stuff, Rafe, long-term view, and bring down just a couple of smaller interesting stuff in the last week or two. Nokia counters. See, this is interesting because I've just popped an editorial up on All About Windows Phone about how it's important that Windows Phone 8 does fill in the gaps it has at the moment in Windows Phone 7, so that people coming from platform A, which have a feature, also has that feature in Windows Phone B. And it's like, you know, the data counter seems such an obvious thing to have, but that it's only coming to the platform now through Nokia Beta Labs, you know, it says quite a bit for where there were gaps in Microsoft's planning of Windows Phone.
It does. I mean, I said this when I wrote this up, that really this is something that should have been included from the get-go. And I think it's one of the problems that has faced Windows Phone 7, that there are very obvious gaps. And it's particularly apparent to, you know, power users and geeks, if you like, which is why it hasn't been terribly attractive to them, why it's faced a lot of criticism. But I think even your average user sometimes gone, oh, I kind of expected that to be there. And in some markets, it's more apparent than others. You know, Bluetooth file transfer is actually a really good example. You know, in the US, and I'd suggest most of the Western European markets, it's not that big a deal because, you know, people tend not to Bluetooth files to each other that much, apart from maybe, you know, at the younger end of the market. But in some places, it's, you know, considered absolutely vital, and that's missing from Windows Phone. We're pretty sure that that's going to make a return in Windows Phone 8. I'd be very surprised if it didn't.
Wouldn't also surprise me if this is a bit of code that Nokia have written that they're contributing to Windows Phone 8, that the guys have just went, you know what? There's no reason this can't run on 7. Yeah, chuck it out and see what happens.
I think this is the case with this counters. You know, Nokia's decided to fill in the gaps in the meantime. How much of that code then ends up elsewhere? It's difficult to say. You know, I suspect it's less direct contributing to the source code than sort of, you know, providing expertise in certain places. And, you know, NFC and Bluetooth is probably a good example of that. And it's more about, you know, helping Microsoft specify things maybe than hard code. I don't know. We'd have to talk to some of the Microsoft and Nokia people to find out what goes on behind the scenes. And I'm not sure they'd be very willing to talk about
it. Oh, yeah, we'd have a lovely KGPR answer, wouldn't we? It's like Nokia are contributing immensely and we're finding a flow of information. It's going back and forth between the two companies to help build the wonderful synergy that is building up between them. We don't need to go there. We can make it up.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at something like the NFC wallet functionality. You know, the Lumia 610 NFC edition got announced a while back, and we were very specifically told that that code was done by Nokia and built on top of Windows Phone. And lo and behold, we've got something that's pretty much identical in Windows Phone 8. So it makes you wonder whether some of that might have been contributed across, or at least, you know, some of the ideas or the stuff that was learned in the process of doing that went across. I mean, I think another example of this filling in the gap application is network setup, which I know you've used, Ewan.
Yeah, I've used it when I'm coming back from GIFGAF. This is actually, Rafe, to be honest, a Eurovision thing. The amount of bouncing around that I do in the first quarter of every year, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Austria, Switzerland, and possibly Estonia are on the cards for the start of 2013. And it's just really easy nowadays to pick up a SIM card when you go through the airport that gives you, you know, 50 gig of data for however long it is, for a couple of euros. Pop it in. And your phone gets set up with all the settings and it's done. You don't need to, I remember back in the days where you had to like type everything in by hand. You had to have a complete file of fax full of what all the proxy numbers were for all the different servers. You still have to do that if you're putting GIFGAF settings into your phone. But other than that, when you're bouncing around, the network setup is a really useful and quick addition. And again, it's a fill the gap thing in. I remember when Symbian first picked this up, we were, how did you do that? I said, oh, it's just got a big database in the firmware.
Yeah.
Really?
We should probably explain for the benefit of people what's going on here. It's when you put in a new SIM card, it actually needs to use different internet and MMS settings. And what network setup does is change those settings for you. I think a lot of people, particularly from the Symbian world, will kind of expect the phone to do that automatically on its own. Sadly, Windows Phone will only do that when you kind of start it up for the first time. And so previously, the only way to change these settings was to actually reset your Windows Phone device. So I, for one, was very glad to see network setup, you know, come along. And this first arrived back in November. And the reason we're talking about it now, again, is it's just been updated. And actually, it's now got the GIFGAF settings in it. So
hey!
If you install the latest version, you can switch to GIFGAF with no problem whatsoever. And it will recognize what network you're running on and then offer you a number of settings. If none of them ones are the ones you want, you can actually add these settings manually as well. So it just adds that added degree of flexibility. And again, I think this is something that some markets do a lot more than others. And, you know, having been developed mainly in the US, you know, Windows Phone didn't always think about the fact that people might want to do this. You know, you go to, you know, the Middle East or, you know, India or markets like that, and you'll find that having multiple SIM cards is actually the normal thing. It's not exceptional. You know, we're talking about in terms of international roaming, but in a lot of countries, you know, people will have multiple SIMs, so, you know, they can call their friends on, you know, a network-to-network tariff, or, you know, get a better value at a certain time of the day, or for some other reason. So it just sort of underlines to me sometimes the lack of the maturity and the lack of the worldview that, you know, Windows Phone 7 in particular had. As I say, it's interesting, a lot of that will come from Nokia. I think in Windows Phone 8, that's probably the area where they can contribute most in some way. Just having a knowledge of those markets and how they operate and what features are important, and saying, you need to do this if we're going to get Windows Phone into market X, Y, or Z. And counters, yeah, great example of this. You know, it's basically, it shows a tile on screen with, you know, the background shaded or not shaded to indicate how much of your quota you've got left. So if you're on a contract, you're generally on limited minutes, limited data, and limited SMS. You know, some markets, the quotas are a lot tighter than they are in the US, where it tends to be, you know, you pretty much get all you can eat, maybe with the exception of data.
Paying something like, you know, the standard, I think most people expect to pay $80 a month for their cell phone bill, all told, in the US, which is, it's like, really, like, we're paying a fiver.
And it's, you know, unusual to use up all your included minutes, where other markets, you know, it can be a lot closer. So having an at-a-glance view of being able to see what you've got left is actually quite an important thing to have, especially when, you know, that the log application is basically just showing phone numbers, you know, so you can see a history of who you've called, but you can't really get any information on how much you've done. So again, it's, you know, a valuable addition. And, you know, install this, once you've set up your limits, you know, it will then track all the usage in the background. So, you know, a really quite handy application. I also like the fact it's got something, you know, a top contacts feature in it, so you can see who you've called the most and who you sent the most messages to. Incoming and outgoing stuff is counted there. You know, okay, it's not strictly necessary, but it's kind of a fun extra fact. And Nokia are quite good at including that sort of thing in their applications. You know, the basic functionality is always very solid and it's front and center of the opening panorama, but quite often there's an extra little bit, you know, buried in the application as well.
Yeah, what's needed is, who is costing you the most money?
Yeah, that's right. We should say that some of these applications have equivalents from other manufacturers, particularly the network setup one. There's an equivalent for Samsung, HTC, yeah, and LG as well. Although this counter one is pretty unique, and, you know, it's kind of, I think, a portent of what we will see in Windows Phone 8. We will see this kind of, you know, tracking of usage become more important. And it's one of the things that Microsoft kind of hinted at when they did their Windows Phone 8 preview, that they're aware that that was an issue. And so the whole, you know, issue around minimizing data consumption would become more important. I expect to hear a lot more about that once more of the Windows Phone 8 features get revealed.
It's also showing that differentiation that the manufacturers can do in software, even under the really restrictive regime that Windows Phone 7 has. Yes, we expect it to be loosened off slightly in Windows Phone 8, but a lot of the choice that you can have in a Windows Phone handset is not over how big a screen I want. They're all kind of the same, apart from physicality, not how much memory. They're all pretty much the same. It's down to applications. The Weather Channel is a good one here as well, right? Because it has been updated to version 2.0, but it's only available on Nokia Lumia at version 2.0. They've managed to put that exclusivity period in there. Obviously, Nokia are going to be paying for that. But again, it's an approach that we've seen. I think Zombies Run is getting a bundle of extra levels, again, exclusive and financed both by Nokia and Microsoft, I think, in that case.
Yeah, that's right. And ESPN, you know, has had updates that are just for Nokia devices.
And that's been extended twice, that exclusivity period, as I recall, as well.
That's right. And, you know, the Weather Channel has done something similar. And I'll make no apology for talking about the Nokia exclusive, because actually that's the stuff that's coming out and being active and is interesting to do so. But I can imagine, you know, for those with non-Nokia Windows Phone devices, they will find this quite frustrating, because the stuff is happening and they're not able to get access to it. So it's, in a way, it's fragmentation of a sort. But, you know, I don't think it's unreasonable if Nokia pay a developer to do something, they then get a, you know, exclusive period on it. And in most of the cases, these exclusive periods are expiring after a certain amount of time. I mean, just to talk about the Weather Channel one, it was already a pretty strong application, maybe a bit advertising heavy for my liking, but, you know, the core weather forecasting functionality is there, with, you know, multiple locations and then showing forecasts of different time lengths, be it, you know, a few hours ahead, you know, 10 days ahead, and you had radar maps and you could overlay temperature and rainfall and all that sort of thing on there. But the most interesting addition for me was personalized weather alerts. And essentially what you do is you set up a certain set of conditions. So you say, if it's over a certain temperature, the wind's coming from this direction and it's over this speed and the pollen count is this, you know, crater, an amazing day weather alert, you know, a slightly cack-handed way of getting the amazing everyday branding into the app there that Nokia's been using its advertising campaign. But, you know, actually the underlying idea is pretty neat. And so what you see is, looking at the weather forecast data, it will then say, ah, these days will match your conditions that you set up, so that's going to be an amazing day for you. The obvious ones are things like, you know, if it's going to be over a certain temperature, you know, you have it as a sunny day, or if you've got wind from a particular direction, maybe that's good for sailing. And those are the setup. The other a kind of interesting addition. It's a visual one. I'm not sure how much utility it really has, but it's an augmented reality view which overlays photos on a live camera view that people have submitted from around the world. It's kind of user submitted weather photos. You know, it has to have some kind of weather connotation, and it's submitted through the Weather Channel's Eyewitness service. And actually the app now allows you to submit your own photo through that. But it does, you know, create quite a visual feast for you to look at. I actually prefer the way it's in the main panorama as kind of amazing pictures for you to look at. As I say, it feels a bit too much out of the core of a weather forecast application for me, you know, adding features for the sake of it. But I guess some people may like it. So, you know, download it, have a look at it. It's worth a try. And of course, it's a free download from the Nokia collection in the Windows Phone Marketplace.
But another important fact here that is the sheer number of weather applications that are out there. You do have to do something different, Rafe. It's no longer great to put up a live tell that says, this is what the weather's going to be like today, because there are just so many of them out there that you need to be doing these things that are different. And I also think that the Weather Channel have an advantage here, that they can put a lot of money into an advertising and lead generation because they have the advertising on there. They know that, you know, a user who keeps the application on the phone will earn us X pounds or dollars for the next 12 months. So we can afford to spend almost that much on Google AdSense campaigns and you know, the sort of advertising spend you need to do per user, you know, for Weather Channel. That's part of the balance sheet. That's not available to someone that's just doing a simple weather application that just, you know, you download it for $4.99. They have it. They've got you once and they don't get any more payments. Weather Channel is an ongoing payment coming in from the user. Admittedly, with the advertising, it is a bit parasitic. But that's why I think you see, especially in weather applications, all these weird, funky features like the My Friends Weather that the Weather Channel has. And, you know, I want to know why you think I'm in Glasgow. I haven't been over in Glasgow for months. So there's something slightly screwy with that one. But again, it's this interesting clamor to get people in to an application to try and make them continually produce revenue for the developers. It's changing how apps are designed and how advertised and sold. Rafe, I mean, it comes on. I mean, the thing I wanted to point out to end this bit here was that's why I was very interested to see in-app purchasing was one of the things that was mentioned at the Windows Phone Developer Summit.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you probably schooled me properly on why you would add these features to a weather app. I mean, from a personal
point of view. In the nicest possible way.
Of course. From a personal point of view, I actually like the Weatherflow application, which keeps things really simple. And again, that's available from the Windows Phone Marketplace. But I actually had to buy that application because the weather data, you know, it doesn't come free. The developer does have to pay for it. But I was willing to do so to kind of get an ad-free minimal experience that, you know, gives me the information I want very quickly. But of course, other people will take it in a different way. But you're right, that kind of acquisition of users is having a big effect on how app strategy happens going forward. And, you know, for example, a lot of that is about having a stream of updates for an application, because generally when you release an update, you encourage a few more users to download the application. It kind of get people writing about it or appears at the top of lists and things like that. So I suspect we will see more of this, and there are, you know, countervailing forces here about, do you create the very best possible app experience, or does your business model dictate that you have to do certain things to your app which may annoy the users in some ways, but at the end of the day actually earns you more money?
We've went all philosophical, which is the two of us there, Rafe, haven't we?
Yes, we did. Well, we tend to waffle a bit when there's just two of us on the podcast.
Yeah, just see where the conversation goes. Okay, one final bit of news here. Microsoft's Build 2012. Details are now emerging of their big conference that's coming up. Rafe, what do we know so far on the event?
Very little, actually. I mean, What we do know about it is that you're going to be able to register for it and get a bit more information at 8 o'clock on the 8th of August. Now, I think you might be detecting a slight 8 theme there. I wonder why. But yes, it's actually going to cover all the Microsoft technologies, Windows 8, Windows Azure, you know, Visual Studio, I should say, as well as Windows Phone 8. But it is intended to be their big developer conference of the year. And obviously, this is a pretty significant one, given all of the, you know, updates, announcements, new products that are coming out of Microsoft this fall, I guess I should say, if we're doing it in an American speech, autumn for the rest of the world. And it's actually going to be taking place just a week or so after the official launch of Windows Phone 8, which is October the 26th. And this conference is then, I think, October the 30th to November the 2nd. So it's going to be multiple days, lots of sessions. But I think for those that want to get the lowdown on what Microsoft technology, you know, is doing and where it's going next, this will be the conference to go to.
Rafe, can you fly me to America? Rafe, can you fly me to America? Can you fly me to America? Rafe, can you fly me to America?
Well, yes, we'll have to look into that in a bit more detail, Ewan.
He said yes, and we've got it recorded.
Maybe.
Oh, he's downgrading now. You're like somebody trying to give a medal to the gymnastics team. You know that. Okay, well, finally, just to close off, getting to the end of the podcast, what applications have you been using this week, Rafe? What's the highlight that's been picked up?
Ooh, that's quite a tricky one, because I've been downloading quite a few applications this week, but one that did stand out in my mind was the Heathrow Airport Guide app, and this is actually official from Heathrow Airport itself, and I wrote this up on the site earlier. You know, I thought, oh, it's just going to be the usual arrival and departures board, and yes, it does have that, and yes, it has a search for flights so you can look into the future, and that's great. And each of those flights then gets a, you know, its own pivot page with kind of live status updates and sort of additional information. But you also get other bits built into this, which is kind of a city guide, which for all the destinations where the, you know, planes go from the airport. It's okay, it's not a fully comprehensive travel guide, but it does have things like the basics, you know, visa and passport information, climate, you know, the key attractions, you know, useful contact numbers. So I was quite impressed by that. And, you know, with any of the flights that you see, you can then add it to the My Flights section of the app, which is basically a way to then get back to a particular flight fast. You know, so you can look it up before you are due to travel and then have easy access to kind of live status updates. And actually, there's an option to have push notifications on those flights, and you know, you'll be notified if there's a change in status. There's also, as you might expect from the name of the app, you know, lots of information about the airport, and that includes, you know, a map of the terminal and listing of all the shops, the restaurants and the services. One of the things I did like is, rather than just having the listing, if you click on the map icon when you're in a description for a shop, it'll actually show you where it is in the airport. And for something like Heathrow, which has some very big terminals, that's actually pretty handy for being able to navigate your way around. And it does cover all four of the active terminals at Heathrow at the moment, and there's a journey plan to make it easy to get to and from the airport by public transport. And parking information, you can actually take a photo, and location tagging, a lot of functionality in this application. So I was quite impressed by this. It's a free download from the Windows Phone Marketplace, and I think if you're going through Heathrow Airport, it's well worth a look.
For the record, there is no easy way to travel to Heathrow. There is hard and even harder than you could possibly imagine ways to travel to Heathrow.
That's a little harsh.
A little harsh. If you have your experiences and would like to share them about your travel to Heathrow, then you can get in touch with us through the website, allaboutwindowsphone.com, emails, Twitters, Facebooks, and all the usual places. For me, really for the last 3 days, it's all been about the ESPN application, which we mentioned earlier on the show. The Olympics are going on. And they have the little Olympic section there to give headlines, social networks flow. Turning into Arkwright from Open All Hours there. Look it up on Wikipedia for everybody who's not in the UK. The medal table and all of that. But I still keep dipping in this one also because, you know, it's great for catching up with baseball scores. It's not the easiest things to pick up in the UK sports news to see how things are going on with the Texas Rangers and the Pittsburgh Pirates. But I'm able to pin that onto my live screen and get all the couch stairs and the results from the games that have happened while I've been sleeping thanks to the time difference. The London 2012 edition is a great addition to the application. And it's just slowly building itself up into it's not completely comprehensive, but it's great for getting the headlines and the main stuff and all the sports stuff. So when I need to look knowledgeable down the pub around things that are happening in football, I can just tuck this under the table, have a quick look and go, oh, did you hear about Heskey?
Yeah, no, it is a good example of how sports apps should be done. I think in the absence of a BBC Olympic app, boo for Windows Phone, There is one for Android and iOS, but apparently Windows Phone wasn't big enough market for the BBC to go after. This is a great addition. I've actually been following the Olympics by using the mobile website. That's been the most convenient option for me. But I do agree, ESPN is a kind of a general sports app. It does show how it should be done. And it'd be great to see some more of these in the marketplace.
So there we go. That's your All About Windows Phone Insight for the week. The clock is now ticking over past the 35-minute mark, which means any sort of appeals that you want to do if you're a South Korean fencer, that appeal process is now finished. Please leave. It only means for me to say thank you to Rafe Banford for popping along.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you all out there for listening to the podcast. Great to have your support every week and your ears where we bring you the best that we can about the Windows Phone world. Thank you. And we'll shall catch you back here next week for the Insight podcast. It's going to be interesting because I've got the Edinburgh Festival now bouncing around as well, Rafe. So I might have to do this at the end of a crackly phone line again.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see on that one. But you can, of course, follow the site, allaboutwindowsphone.com, on Twitter at @AA_WP, and on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwindowsphone.
And for listening, thank you very much. We'll catch you in the next show.